Session with John Fung Lee in Seoul National University. So probably all of you have seen this beautiful image of the so-called Virat cluster. And then, so useful number to remember is that observations suggested that the mass of the main cluster is large, 10 to the 15 solar masses. The mass of the subcluster is of order 10 to the 14 solar masses. It's not clear exactly how much yet. There's some uncertainty, namely, we don't really know whether that was really 1 to 10 head-on collision or 1 to 6 or whatever. That's something you have to infer by detailed modeling. But these are the kind of numbers that are relevant to my talk. So the virial radius of 10 to 15 solar mass objects of this type is about 1.5 megaparsec. So that's another useful number to remember.
Over
10 or 14
that's
right.
So
this is half a megaparsec. Mm-hmm. So I think somewhere here. And the escape velocity of this cluster is 2,000 kilometers per second. So that's another number that's kind of relevant. Just you know the radius, virial radius. You know the mass, right? So 2gm divided by r squared. Just give you the numbers that are relevant. Yes?
To use radial theorem.
I'm not using video with them.
You're
not. Just give you the orders of magnitude, or the problem.
Because you can't use a very thin unless you have a current system. It's not obvious. Right. This is
no, I'm not using any video. I know the mass, I know the radius. Because in this talk, I'm trying to make a point that 3,000 kilometers per second is too large. 2,000 is barely, and 1,000 is reasonable. And then, but you know that for you to be convinced that you need to know what kind of mass, radius, and velocity are involved in this problem. So 2,000 kilometers per second is kind of escape velocity. Well, 2gm divided by r square root is what kind of you need to know. So this image is a better one. Actually, this is a beautiful image, but in order to see really where the shock is, because this blip, this is not a shock. This is a contact discontinuity. That's a shock. That's where the density jumps. And from this jump, you can infer a Mach number, which is 3. And you know ambient temperature is 10 keV. You know the sound speed. So that you multiply them together to get shock velocity, which is 4,700 kilometers per second. Okay. However, so this is a shock velocity though. This is the yes.
This is very puzzling because you do have a sharp boundary. I can't see a sharp boundary where you say there's a contact discontinuity. But then you're saying the shock front is not the sharp boundary. So where is that sharp boundary there in this surface, right? Because, I mean, I assume that the sharp boundary should be the same in both. You're plotting the same things.
Yeah, I'm plotting the same thing. That's right.
So that shouldn't be the sharp. That should be the sharp boundary then. That the contact is continuity.
But isn't that, I mean, it's pretty sharp to me though. No?
But so is that contact discontinuity. So,
the
radius from where? I think might be. The...
Oh yeah, actually, it's radius from here.
Right. So what you're looking for is that inner one, I think. Yeah. Right.
This one.
That's the contact discontinuity.
Right. Yeah.
I see. So you're saying that two sharp features. Right. That's and that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So to get my three plus minus one from the sharp or less sharp, the inner one.
Here, yeah, this one. Yeah.
Okay. So this is the contact discontinuity.
Not the other one.
Okay. I don't know. I believe you.
Now, right, but this is shock velocity. And people realize later, by running hydro simulations, that the shock velocity is not necessarily the same as velocity of the clump that's going through. Because the clump can also be slowed down by the gravitational friction. So, and there's various other effects. For example, there is, in fact, the clump here, which can further accelerate the gas. So, but then clump is pulled inward. So, there are various effects. And then, depending on your initial conditions, depending on how you model the systems, mass ratios, all kinds of things, you get various values for estimations for the clump velocity now, which varies from, say, 2,000 kilometers per second to 4,000 kilometers per second. But point is, simulations seem to suggest that the clump velocity is not as high as 4,700 kilometers per second, but something like 3,000 kilometers per second. Again, some number to keep in mind.
Information on the velocity, not so much from the jump in temperature, but from basically the shape of the shock, the bow shock. Basically, you have a supersonic shock, so that angle is telling you something about the relation to the sound speed of the gas. Is there, if you try to derive the velocity that way, is it consistent?
Yeah, I don't know.
No, it's not, but it's hard to do it because you know, it does not propagate through the uniform medium, right? So you not simply can give the Mach cone, and also this bullet can you know, be destroyed as it moves through the cluster. So you basically, you know, you pull the gas with different with a target of different radios at different locations. So the Mach cone arguments are really hard to apply.
There's probably also projection. We don't know. Exactly.
Projection is probably not an issue because the line of sight velocity is difference between the bullet and the cluster is small, and the estimated velocity through is large. So the only projection is if the bullet is significantly offset along the line of sight with respect to the cluster center. But then it's hard to explain, you know, the strong features. So probably. Projection is not a strong effect, but the Mach cone still can be.
Right, but just very naively, the fact that we see, you know, a nice Mach cone, probably the velocity is a few times the sound speed or something like that, which would give you something probably that's somewhat lower than this sound speed, hundreds of kilometers per second.
Is that the Mach number that he's quoting? I'm confused. Isn't that how you get the velocity, by the angle of?
No. That number is coming from the jump in the density.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
But I thought.
So Mach cone naively would give you higher velocity than these numbers.
Higher
velocity, but I think it's, yeah, but it's because the explanation is that the shock just propagates at different speeds.
I thought it would be lower because it would just be just effect of a few times sound speed or something like that.
Yeah, I know the opening angle naively looks like a smaller Mach number, but I, for reasons that you just described, one can't just measure the angle and take its cosecant or whatever.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I just remember that the Mach number from Mach cone is inconsistent with what you get from the jump, but I might get in the same.
Yeah, I'm sure people have looked at the cone. Maybe they have. I just don't know.
I mean, people have looked in terms of whether you need magnetic field draping to give the cone its shape. Once you factor in magnetic field, it's not clear that you would be able to derive velocity for sure.
Right. So then, so Simon Wines asked this question, right? So back then it was 4,500 points per second as a shock velocity. So that seems awfully high. So then you ask, well, he asked, can I find the clump moving at this velocity anywhere in Minimum Symmetry? Mm-hmm. And then he got the probability with some extrapolation from that simulation, because Millennium Simulation contains only 5, 10 to the 15 synchronous objects. So they don't have any statistics. So they had to rely on the statistics that derived from 10 to the 14 synchronous objects and say the velocity of the clump around the small object should scale with the mass of the host. Sounds reasonable, but needs to be verified. But then you use that argument, then he says probability of finding clump that's moving at this velocity is more than 10%, so that's not in shadow. Okay. Then mass was revised upward after this paper was published, so Farah and Rosen claim that with this revision, upward revision to the mass of the main head from the observation, it seems the probability was lower than what the Hayashi et al. Was claiming. However, then the shock velocity, it turns out the shock velocity isn't really the clump velocity, it's kind of lower. So again, that brought it back into the agreement with Dr. Sivian. So everything was kind of nice and okay and everything else. Right. However, we're asking a different question because somehow, Bulleit cluster is famous for Bulleit, but the most peculiar feature of this system is that the gas here is now getting out of the huge gravitational potential, 10 to 15 solar mass objects, something like a third to half of your radius. That's remarkable, and it's not that easy to do. Again, escape velocity of this class is 2,000 kilometers per second, right? So you have to, and then this thing is a little thing, that it's 10 to 14 sort of, so you have to shoot the bullets at extremely high velocity to get things out of the potential well, if you can do that at all.
So our veer, sorry, is where?
It's 1.5 megaparsec.
Okay, so you've slightly displaced the gas. You haven't ejected it from the cluster or anything.
Right, you haven't. But 2,000 is kind of a number that you can keep in your mind. Right. It cannot be 500, right? So at this point, you have to just simulate it. But I just gave you the number that you can keep in your mind.
Where the gas offsets from the dark matter, are the two clumps, are they aligned? Let's say, for the bullet, the gas is moving away from its clump in some direction. For the main component, is the gas moving away from the dark matter also in the same direction? It looks kind of...
What do you mean by that? I'm sorry. So,
when you look at the bullet, the gas and the dark matter, if you look at their centers, there's a position in which tells you in which the bullet is moving. Now, for the main, the main halo, that gas, if it's displaced from the center, should be displaced in the same direction too.
This thing is already past the collision, right? So this thing is moving this way, right? As you said. And this thing is moving that way, right? And gas is left behind. Does that answer?
We're pulling the gas.
At least that's the implication. Does that answer your question? So, basically, I just gave you the numbers, right? Because I just didn't want to show you the simulations that it didn't even run. So I just wanted to give you some rough numbers to understand what the scale of the problem is. So this is the first 3D hydro simulation run by Volker Springel. These are two, so because you don't really know what pre-collision conditions for the clusters, you have to do the parameter search. So one of the parameters is how concentrated the dark matter halo is. And here is clamping factor, the concentration parameter 2, concentration parameter 4. So this is a more concentrated than that one. And then they run the simulation, assuming that the subclamp was at rest relative to the main halo at the infinity. So then at about I think twice the virial radius of the system, the velocity picks up something like 2,000 kilometers per second as initial velocity at twice the virial radius, then shoot. Then he was happy that he could reproduce the displacement between gas and bullet. So that was the point of the paper. It's a very nice paper. However, what about this? Well, gas isn't moving at all. I mean, some, sure, but not as much, not nearly as much as what you see in the real data. So that's the puzzle. So the key is the initial velocity, just like I said. So bullet picks up the velocity of about 2,000 kilometers per second, about twice the real radius of the main cluster. And that velocity wasn't simply sufficient. But of course, that initial velocity is a completely reasonable thing to do. I mean, you just assume that the bullet was at rest at infinity and just fell, right? In fact, that's quite reasonable, even if you run the full cosmological simulations. That's the kind of velocity that you get in the simulation as well. So that's really a completely reasonable thing to do. But another thing you can do, because this is non-cosmological simulation anyway, you then say, okay, I want to vary velocities as well. And in fact, Mastropietro and Burkert, they were the ones who were puzzled by the fact that the Sprengel simulation couldn't reproduce displacement of the gas in the main cluster. So they really wanted to understand that. So they have varied mass ratios. They varied initial velocities. They varied concentration parameters. Also, they explore the offset merger, not completely head-on. Because the density is obviously highest at the center, if you do the head-on collision, it will be more difficult for you to get the gas out. But if it's offset, maybe there's a hope. Then this is the result. So this is 2,000 kilometers per second, just like what Volker Sprengel did. Offset, by the way, but in this case it's offset. And this one, 3,000 kilometers per second. So it seems like 2,000 is not enough. You need 3,000. But let me then, however, remind you that the observed offset is even greater than what you see in the simulation. So 3,000 is all right, but it's kind of, it barely reproduces the gas distribution. But 2,000 doesn't seem to be enough. Yes?
Didn't the post-Kaler and Mason relations, always two? Mm-hmm.
No, they also vary in concentrations. But I think for a particular case where they think is the best model, I think concentration was, I don't remember exactly, but I think concentration was 6.
So much higher than
6. Yeah, it was 5, that's right. Mm-hmm. I think it was 6.
So another question, yeah. Is there cooling in this simulation?
No, it's adiabatic, but they also actually include the cooling. Oh. They separately run the simulation with cooling, yeah. It didn't really change anything.
It doesn't change it?
No.
And they look at X-ray luminosity, I think, that's
right.
Just cast it.
Right. Oh, but this is X-ray brightness.
X-ray brightness.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I forgot to say that.
So what was the initial state of the gas with the...
Yeah, that's what I was asking. I have to remember. So the Volker Sprengel and the Mastropietro, they, I think, used different initial conditions for the gas. But I think they assumed the hydrostatic equilibrium with the NFW profile they are seeing. So that's the distribution of gas. I think Volker Sprengel assumed beta model. But I think they assume the hydrostatic equilibrium. Yeah. So there's a core in the gas distribution.
Uh,
Let's see. But so okay, but actually, before moving on, so what is the gas distribution before the collision is an important question, because if gas is shallower for some reason, maybe it was preheated, the gas distribution would be much, much shallower than you might naively think. Then it becomes easier to get the gas out of the potential. But what they're doing is very reasonable, so that's a very good starting point. And if you vary concentration, you lower the gas density accordingly because you're assuming hydrostatic equilibrium. So, so after all these things, the main conclusion seems to be that you needed at least 3,000 kilometers per second at quasi-gravity levels. But this is not completely exhaustive parameter search. There are lots of parameter search. That's really a huge amount of work. But of course, it's difficult to prove that you have exhausted all the parameter space. But I gave you the number, right? So 2GM divided by r square root of this guy is 2,000. So from from just that number, you know that you need a fairly large amount of velocity to do anything for the main cross. Okay, now.
So then the question we asked is, can we find subclusters not anywhere in the simulation, but subclusters that are just about to undergo nearly head-on collision, whose velocity is 3,000 kilometers per second at twice the virial radius of the main cluster. Okay? Basically, this is a non-cosmological simulation they run for particular initial condition. So I wanted to ask them, okay, so you got this solution for virial cluster. I want to say now whether this particular initial condition they found is consistent with cosmology. Okay. So to do that, we need a very large cosmological simulation because these red clusters, 10 to 15 solar masses, in such simulation in fact existed, and that's the MICE simulation. It's a standard lambda CDM. Box size is huge. It's basically Hubble volume simulation. And the number of particles is 2,000 cubed. Particle mass is 10 to 11. Now, usually when you try to do the good statistics for the halo, you need to have more than 100 particles per halo. So that will push your mass of the minimum mass of the halo you can trust up to something like 10 to 13 solar masses. But that's perfect. We don't care about those small things either. We care only the mass is greater than 10 to the 14 solar masses. My simulation gives us a halo catalog, and they use this friends of friends method with this magic linking length parameter 0.2. What that means is you say, okay, you have a center of the halo, you try to find a friend around you, but you don't want to search beyond so-called linking length. That length is 0.2 times number the length of the box divided by number of particles. So that's the mean particle separation. That happens to be 0.3 megaparsec. Now, this particular value of linking length of 0.2 is known to sort of magically produce a result that are closely matched the Biot theorem. I don't really use Biot theorem, but this is what people normally use anyway. Then let me just tell you what's going on here. So just friend-of-friend mass. So here is your the cluster center. You try to find friends by doing linking length thing. And these blue particles are considered as members of this particular halo that was found in simulation. And what's shown in the black contour is the isodensity contour. So friend-of-friend identifies non-spherical halo, but that boundary of this friends of friends halos closely matches isodensity contour. So that's a very reasonable thing to do. But then the question is, how is the total mass of this halo identified by the friend of friend compared to M200 that I want to compare to the observations? And there was a very nice analysis done by Lukic et al. Where they found let's look at right panel. Concentration parameter is 10, and then x-axis is a friend-of-friend mass. You just sum up the number of particles and multiply that by particle mass. You get friend-of-friend mass. You also have M200 you will find by defining over density of 200. 200 critical. 200 critical. And then just estimate the mass within it. And from this, it's obvious that friend-of-friend mass will be larger than M200. But only the question is how much. So that depends on how many particles you have per halo. If you don't have many particles, friend-of-friend mass will be very noisy. So there's a distribution, in fact, for the friend-of-friend mass divided by M200. But for our case, we have lots of particles per halo. So we're somewhere here, between 10,000 and 1,000. The mean number of particles we have for the clusters we care about is something like 3,000, a lot of them. So we're here. When clusters are much less concentrated, which will be the case for the massive clusters, because they are loosely bound, the friend-of-friend mass tends to be really overestimated compared to the M200. For our case, we estimated that for our particular the halos that we care about, the friend-of-friend mass can be overestimated relative to M200 by 30%. Now, why is that important? Okay, it's important for estimating this R200. And why is that important? We really want to do this, right? So you have the main halo. You shoot the bullet from somewhere, right? Of course, as the bullet gets closer in, the velocity will be increased. If your estimate of the R200 was off, your velocity estimation will become very uncertain, right? But we are sort of now comfortable that the radius estimated from friend to friend is only 10% greater than R200. So that's not going to change any conclusion that I'm drawing. I just wanted to say that. It's an important technical detail. So okay, let's find bullet-like systems. By bullet-like systems, we mean the halos, main halos surrounded by sub-halos that are undergoing nearly head-on collision, and mass ratio is 1 to 10 or larger. So these are all subhalos. Then just select the subhalos that are close in, right? 2 to 3 times the variance of the main halo. And then select the, those who are near the head-on collision course, then mass ratio 1 to 10. They will have about 1,000 systems that satisfy all these conditions. Okay, not 5,000. That's why this mass simulation is very, very useful. One note on the mass ratio. So from now on, I would assume that the mass ratio of the Virus cluster is 1 to 10. However, Master Pietro and Burkert claim that the 1 to 6 fits better. But this is 10 to the 15th sort of mass object, right? 10 to 15 versus 10 to 14 is pretty already dramatic. But if you have 1 to 6, then that's even more dramatic collision. In fact, so this is the log probability versus mass ratio. So it's exponentially, this probability of finding nearly major merger systems is exponentially rare. Right? So if, for example, indeed the pre-collision mass ratio of the bullet and the main halo is 1 to 6, my conclusion will be even more dramatic. Okay, so I'm going to quote some rare number. Small probability, but that small probability would be even smaller if indeed these systems have 1 to 6. Yeah.
So this is for high velocity, or is this for all mergers? You're plotting this for all mergers?
These are among this.
Okay, so only for high velocity
mergers.
That's right,
that's right. That's right.
There are many more of them happening at high mass ratios, basically.
Right, that's right. Which is, yeah, what you would expect.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the main plot. Just forget about these two curves. These are not relevant for my main conclusion. Just look at this. So this is the distribution of log velocity within this distance from the main cluster. So this is a measured distribution from that 1,000 system that we found in the simulation. Okay. And then this is a Gaussian fit to that. Now, 10 to the 3.4 is 2,500 kilometers per second here, and the 3,000 is here. So it's way, way off. And the mean velocity is something like, 1,200 kilometers per second. But that's actually, surprisingly, in a way, very similar to what you get by simply shooting a bullet at rest, infinity, and then let 10 to 15 surrounding objects grab it, right? But in reality, because of this cosmological tidal field, these particles move around. But basically, the acceleration that you pick up near the cluster is the most, by far, most dominant one, okay? Which is reasonable. So there's nothing magical about what I'm showing you here. But of course, the important thing is, what is the distribution width, right? You can get mean right by this argument I just gave you. But I guess, quite remarkable thing is, this width of the Gaussian is nowhere near broad enough to accommodate 3,000 kilometers per second.
But it should be Gaussian.
So this is the, there's no reason. But this is a, so it's a log normal distribution for velocity.
But if you have like extended tails, can you still get away with it?
So yeah, that's a completely valid point. So let me actually give you two numbers. Okay, so first of all, we have more than 1,000 systems.
Yeah.
And we found none which are moving as fast as 3,000 kilometers per second.
That will give you the lower limit to the confidence level that you're rejecting hypothesis that the 3,000 kilometers per second doesn't exist, which is 99.91%. Okay. That's the lower limit. So that's really the best thing I can say right now. But you can do better by simply assuming that distribution is in fact Gaussian. There may be a tail, but let's say. Right.
Then ask what would be the probability. That's an interesting question to ask. Yes.
So I don't understand your lower limit or upper limit. Or so you have one box, which is 3 gigaparsec.
Right.
But of course, the universe is much bigger than that. So even if in your box you don't find anything exactly, there could be other places in there. So is that where this 0.99% comes
from? No, I'm just saying that more than 1,000 systems that we looked at, we found none. That's all.
Mm-hmm. How does it fit with a Sprinkle simulation where you found some in a smaller simulation with a higher velocity?
Sprinkle simulation, you mean white or Sprinkle? Sprinkle simulation is non-cosmological hydro.
Ah, so that's where all the difference is.
Hayashi White are you talking about?
Hayashi White is a Millennium simulation.
Millennium, sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't have seen any verbs even close to this because their measurements are based upon 10 to 14 or something, not 10 to 15.
Also, this explanation was incorrect.
That's right.
That's what people
do. No. Okay, good. That's a good point. So let me just remind you, what I'm showing you here is a velocity at twice the wavelength of the main hill. Okay? Of course, the bullet will further accelerate. In fact, if you just use, okay, good, now I can explain what these curves are. So you then assume that the velocity you pick up further in is simply 2gm divided by r square root, right? Then you get this distribution. So this is what you get by converting this distribution into variables. Then you do pick up this kind of velocity, right? Nowhere near, it's still 3,000 is a bit of, it's a difficult to do, but if you go farther in, probably, you can get some of them which are as fast as 3,000. So I think It's not clear entirely, of course, whether these results are consistent with Hayashi and White results, but there's a
different question you ask.
But yeah, we're really asking different questions. That's
how reliable is your so-called virial theorem readiness?
We're not using virial theorem.
He's just giving you the numbers.
I said so-called.
Okay, so here's the point, right? So
square root.
It has nothing to do with virial theorem, it's just a definition for mass.
Yeah, this is some radius. Some radius that does hydro simulations are used. Right? So you have to start simulation somewhere. And that particular radius was chosen to be twice the R200. We're not really using any real form.
So it goes like one of the square root of R. B. The velocity goes like square root of GL over R.
That's right.
So it's 1 over square root of R, so well, that's not, even if you vary R significant.
Right, that's right. So this is the difference.
You have to lower R to get 3
times. That's right.
Factor 3.
Exactly, that's right.
You have to increase G.
We'll get to that. Hold on. So 3,000 kilometers per second is very well off. And the probability, so this got log normal fit, which actually may or may not be valid. But if you do that, then probability is really small, 10 minus 11. Now, this is for register 0, by the way. And that bullet is register 0.3. My simulation didn't have an output at register 0.3, but it had an output at register 0.5. So we repeated the same thing for ISE. Then we get the slightly greater probability. In fact, things were faster in the past. That's probably simply because lambda slows down the structure. So if we, I'm just speculating, but I think that's correct. If the mass dimension was one with omega mod equals one universe, then the velocity you find in the later epoch would be faster than in the past.
So let me understand. So we observe bullet at register 0.3,
right?
But the velocity of larger than 3,000 kilometers per second must have been at some earlier time, right?
But we have dynamical time, well, free-fall time, is comparable to the age of the universe.
Okay.
They're comparable to the age at that particular restaurant.
That's right.
Right. So it can't be that long.
It cannot be that, but it's not 0.3. I mean, maybe it's 0.3.
Oh, because you were saying this could be really because of the...
That's
well,
right.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that, so this is for like a random merger to have this...
Yes.
Or is it for... Yeah, okay. So. Yes. So, but there are lots of mergers in the universe.
Yes.
So like if you have 10 to the 9 mergers, then one of them could be this. So then you don't have a problem, right? If I have 10. If I take our universe, then there are 10 to the 9 clusters merging, which is probably too big. That's But then we don't have any problem.
That's true.
Okay.
Yes, that's true.
So what happens if you further cut your... So now you have 1,000 such collisions, right? Let's say if you cut them that you require a minimal mass ratio, something like that. Because maybe what you're seeing...
That's what I mean. Minimal mass ratio is 1 to 10.
So you require it?
Yeah, we require that.
Okay, but I'm saying maybe there's an observation bias the way how you pick them up that you should further cut the sample and then...
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's fine. But when probability is this low, right? This kind of selection thing sort of disappears. It's just way off.
Yeah, but the fact that nanos are in 1 in 1,000, it's
yeah, the denominator is slightly different, right?
But yeah, but yeah. I completely agree that I completely agree to you that this is a tricky statistics to do. So-called small number statistics, right?
Yeah.
But it's beginning enough to sort of catch.
So what if you lower this 3,000 to 2,500? Do things suddenly become much easier or?
Yeah, so I had a number in the paper for the 2,000, actually.
Okay.
And I think, let me remember. I think if you lower this to 2,000, this probability was 0.1% at higher energy.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
What if you reduce the cluster mass by like 20%? Will probabilities go up? I mean, you assume it's 10 to the 15, but this number must be uncertain.
Yeah, so here, actually, now this, what I'm quoting here, has nothing to do with spread at this point, right? I'm just saying that, okay, so this equation here is for the host mass halo, the host halo mass greater than 10^15 meters.
But if you take a different threshold, yeah,
then velocity will be lower.
Right. So what if you raise the threshold?
Then we lose statistics. Yeah. But okay. Oh, 5 minutes. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I thought that I would finish much earlier.
It wasn't his fault.
So here the statement. So lambda CDM does not predict the existence of 3,000 kilometers per second subhalo falling into 10^15 solar objects. Okay. Two implications. One, lambda CDM is ruled out. Okay. Second, we haven't exhausted all the parameter space in the high dose image. If the initial velocity is less than 1800 kilometers per second at 2i severe radius, then probability of finding this becomes 1%. Okay. So maybe people haven't worked hard enough to find this. So that's a possibility, sure. But then what if somehow gravity was modified? Then really the way to think about it is quite simple. So you just do 2gm over r, right? This equation that I always call it. So either g Newton was higher farther away, then becomes Newton closer in, then you get one enhancement. All right. Another amusing thought, which is completely nonsense. By the way, this one is nonsense. This one isn't nonsense, but this one is nonsense. But this is amusing, okay? Because I said, if you did this in a lambda CDM, you get lower velocity than the standard CDM, which is omega mod equals 1. So amusing thing was to calculate basically divergence of the velocity, theta, divided by delta, which is basically growth rate, as a function of redshift and as a function of cosmological parameters, then yeah, sure. I mean, if you omega mod equals 1, you get high velocity, right? Much higher than, it's a linear velocity, much higher than what you get in lambda. So lambda may have something to do with it. I don't know, but this sort of this is the way to think about it, basically. Oh, of course, and this thing is complete nonsense.
Okay.
But just telling you how important lambda is in slowing down things. Yeah, so that's the conclusion. So the observed morphology, namely the displacement between gas and the dark matter in the main halo, is peculiar, and that calls for high velocity. That's not possible in lambda CDM. Either you need to run more high dose emissions or lambda CDM rule out. Now, so this is the pink elephant, right? This Nate Buckles thing. You find one cluster at high rest shift and you try to say something about it. But may not be only pink elephants, maybe a couple more out there. For example, we know, I gave a talk on this last year here at Premier. This particular cluster that Kilo mentioned yesterday that I like. So shock velocity is measured for this one also. And that's as high as Villa cluster. So at least we know that there is another monster out there at rest of 0.45. Detailed modeling hasn't been done because the data for this particular cluster is not as good as what you get for the Villa cluster.
But that's an interesting one too. And there's this max, that looks like good. I don't know what the shock velocity of this thing is. I don't know if that's been actually even measured. But there are things like this out there. So maybe Brillat cluster isn't so peculiar. And in that case, that will really reinforce the conclusion that we've seen in this study. AA520, yeah, that's right. That's another one, yes. Yeah. Right. I know, yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's a messy one. Yeah. I'll stop here.
So
So what if the thermal state of gas in the bullet before in transient is different? Then
yeah, so like a gas distribution was puffed.
Right.
Yeah,
or repeated, yeah. Or...
That's in fact, yeah. So I guess I didn't actually sort of said this, but so when you do the parameter search, right?
Yeah.
You should also vary the thermal state of the gas before the collision. Rather than simply assuming hydrostatic equilibrium or a feeding wall. Right, so that's another thing that people
have. But then you can always invent some sort of astrophysical feedback that will give you this buff.
But question how much? If that's outrageously, right? I mean, you have to do the study. For example, if the concentration parameter is say as low as 1, I think it will be much easier to get the gas out. But we know that the concentration of 1 is very peculiar, right? If that was a solution, that would rule out CDM anyway.
No?
The concentration of 1 rules out CDM. Everybody knows that.
Yeah,
exactly.
I'm sorry.
So, do you expect the distribution of velocities to be so narrow? It seems like this Gaussian is centered very sharply around.
It's a long normal, but it's not actually, well.
Is there
I don't know how
it has to be.
I'm not sure we call
so
this narrow or sharp. Yeah, not sure.
It seems like it's quite predictive.
So maybe it simply just has to do with the fact that, so this is the velocity you get simply by shooting the bread from the infinity up in the recipient. So maybe this has to do with this large scale structure, sometimes accelerating, sometimes decelerating the particle.
It's similar, you get some log normal distribution in the spin parameter,
right.
Measuring the other components.
Yeah,
in fact,
In cosmology, you get log normal everywhere.
I should also say about that the variance is exactly what you expect for bulk flow variance.
Yeah, I mean, it's.